So just a random fact, just putting it a little more concrete, right? So I was talking about this cement smellers, the kits that smell cement in the DR. Here in the US, you have meth. So for $5, you can get what we call umbuche of meth. And if you do meth one time, okay, you're in the streets, you're homeless, you're depressed, you can't find a job, you can't get yourself out of that situation, you don't know where you're gonna eat, you have two kids, you are in a park full of other homeless people, the police hasn't come by and picked you up and locked you up for the night, and next to you, there's this guy who's doing meth for $5, okay? And he gives you a little bit. In that situation, it's easy for us to say, oh, I would never do it, right? But if you're there, it's right, and you try meth at least once, your brain stops producing dopamine for 2 years.
Wow.
So you're gonna be 2 years without experiencing happiness for that one hit.
Yo.
So how,
that's crazy.
Get yourself out of that situation where the next night you're in the same situation, your kid has a cold, you got locked yourself out of the temporary shelter because there was a problem with somebody else and they tried to steal your stuff, your maybe your kid's blanket, and they kicked you out and you're depressed, you're gonna go back to doing that $5 that can guarantee a good night's sleep. It's just, yeah, when you see about it that way, it's so much easier to say, oh, they can get help.
3, 2, 1. Well, hello everybody. How are you all? Thank you for tuning in into another episode of The Gargoyles. This is a very special episode. We are talking about a very interesting topic that is affecting, well, it's definitely a global human rights issue, absolutely. And we have here our great hostesses, Bianca. How are you, Bianca?
Hi, I'm good. How are you? I missed you last week.
Oh, yes.
I missed both of you. Oh, my God. But here I am.
Yes, we missed you last week, but I'm glad you're back. And I'm glad that you sound good, girl. We're going to have a lot to talk about today. And
of course, an interesting topic today.
Yes, absolutely. And then we got Juanita. Juanita, how are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. I'm doing all right.
Awesome. How are you doing, Max? I am doing okay, actually. You know, today was a very productive day. Thank you for asking. And then over there, we got a little laugh in the background. Who is that? Who is that? Oh, that's our special guest of the week.
Lasho. my name is Josh, and I am Tomas's older brother.
Yes, I was gonna get to that. Let me speak, Josh. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. So yeah, we got a special guest, my brother Josh. And can you explain to the people, not why you're here, because you're always welcome to be here, but this topic specifically, we know that you're very passionate about. Why is that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's an honor to be here. I am a fan since episode one. I was like, yay. Holy shit, not because you're my brother, but because, I mean, yes, because you're my brother, but the natural...
A little biased, yes. But you know.
the natural conversations and the topics that you guys are having here is amazing, and I just love hearing you guys.
Oh, thank you so much.
Of course. So first of all, I have to apologize. Spanish is my first language. So if you hear me figuring words out or making words out or saying things in Spanish, Tomas is there to step me back in line. This conversation I told Tomas since the beginning, like, if whenever you're having a podcast about homelessness or poverty, I've worked in social justice issues for more than 10 years. I'm a social worker. I've worked in New York with domestic violence and human trafficking, and the DR with poverty and education. In Thailand, I was working with the HIV community. And here in South Oregon now, I've been working with addictions and mental health. Everything related, I haven't like worked specifically with the homeless, like in a shelter or things like that. I have volunteered in shelters. But that's like my life goal, is to dedicate my life working specifically with the homeless population. But yeah, I've had more than 10 years of experience in social justice and community development. And homelessness is at my heart. Yeah, so thank you for having me here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We honestly, growing up, I've always, that's one of the things that I admire most about you, Josh, is like your passion for just like the fight for human rights in many different, the many different aspects that you and projects that you have embarked on over the years, for sure. And like, us growing up in a Christian church that definitely was very
very intentional
about, yeah, exactly, like working with the homeless and helping them by providing food and shelter and all of that. So I know that that was a great playground for you to, as you became older, to continue that kind of work. So yeah, I feel that we can start jumping right into the main topic of the week then. Let's go for it.
I feel like before we get started in talking about homelessness and all of the ways that we're going to talk about it, it's really important to know like what federal entity kind of like deals with this these issues and provides money and aid. And it is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, a.k.a. HUD. You know, some of our audience members may be aware of HUD when it comes to like Section 8 housing, right? Like housing vouchers and stuff like that. But just a more like, I guess, a short definition of like what they do. They administer programs that provide housing and community development assistance. And the department also works to ensure fair and equal housing opportunities for all. That's right off of the USA.gov website. Mm-hmm. So yay. And just to give you a more concrete examples, like they do like avoiding foreclosure, like this is all HUD, like avoiding foreclosure, buying a home, homelessness, home improvements. And if that's not ringing a bell, like there's also, of course, they're like the municipality, like they're like the local agencies. Like, for example, I live in Philly. So there's the Philadelphia Housing Authority. You know, I'm from New Orleans. There's the New Orleans Housing Authority. And those are the local entities that actually administer the programs and stuff like that. So I thought we should start with that just so people, we can all be on the same page. But I know, Josh, you're going to like offer a definition for us of homelessness.
Well, more than offering a definition, let's just define it, like explain a little bit and talk about a little bit about what is literally to be a homeless. So according to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, if you're literally a homeless, if you're living in a place not meant for human habitation, if you're staying in an emergency shelter, if you're residing in a transitional housing, if you're exiting an institution where they temporarily resided for no more than 90 days and have experienced homelessness immediately prior to the entry. Now, people that are in immediate risk of homelessness are people who are losing their primary nighttime residence, which may include a motel or a hotel or a doubled-up situation, or where a person relies on a series of friends or family for a place to sleep. Now, this is within 14 days and lacking resources or support networks to remain in housing. According to HUD, at any given night in the United States, in 2018, there were 552,830 people that experienced homelessness at any night. Now, that was in 2018. The numbers have grown 100,000. Now we are at 553,742.
Wow.
And that's at any particular night. That's not, you know, recurring homelessness or transitional housing, all that.
It's interesting because there are very specific guidelines into like what the federally is considered to be a homeless, but the struggle doesn't start whenever you're officially considered to be a homeless, which is interesting. I feel that a lot of people could consider themselves to be homeless just first night, first day. You know, as soon as the struggle starts, there is needs, there are things to do, you know what I mean? And things that are lack of resources as well. But yeah, there is definitely guidelines to refer to, you know, what officially means to be homeless in a way to kind of like give a more specific data into the population itself. But it's also interesting to, because I was reading about how the definition of homelessness actually varies from nation to nation. And that's like what makes it, that's one of the things that makes it so, so very difficult to actually get an accurate data. So whatever number that you see out there about, oh yeah, in this nation, there is this amount of homeless, or in this state in the United States, there is this amount of homeless. There is more than likely way more than that. Not more than likely. I'm going to say 100% more than that, because just from this plain and simple factor that you cannot just count the total amount, because it's just impossible. Right. Not everybody registers to shelters. Not everybody requests help.
Right.
But also there is the factor that there is people that are not officially considered homeless because they haven't met all of the required guidelines, you know?
That's really interesting. I really enjoyed your definition because I felt like it was really inclusive. I feel like a lot of times when we think of homeless people, when I think of homeless people, at least growing up, I know better now, I think of like the person on the street, but you don't think about the people who like are going from house to house, right? Like yes. That friend who's going from house to house. I remember I was even reading something, and this may be controversial, but there was a statement that was like, not all people on the street are considered homeless, because they may be travelers who aren't like maybe staying in a place. Because I remember you mentioned, Josh, a particular length of time of homelessness or something like that. But I know you just said that like there are different ways to calculate it, and that's what we're talking about now. And even like understanding how like the enumeration, like how it's counted, is really interesting too, because I know here in Philly, and I think maybe all over the nation, that the way that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, with one of the ways that they determine how much money they want to give to a city, right? And you know this, John, I'm pretty sure it just was interesting to me. The way that they determine how much they want to give to a city for different outreach programs is through an annual count, actually, where you go out on a particular day for however many hours and they are doing the enumeration, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that was really interesting too, because that's a very specific point in time.
Right.
Even though we're not talking about, you mentioned like a number that doesn't include a specific point in time, but
yeah,
like,
and even
really interesting in terms of aid.
Yeah, you know? And going further into that, so under the federal statutes in the U.S., unaccompanied youth under the age of 25 and families with children who do not qualify as homeless under other definitions, but who would be defined as homeless under other federal statutes, or have permanent housing in the last 60 days, or families with children who have experienced more than two moves in the last 60 days and are expected to be in fluctuation for an extended amount of time. So even if if you moved twice in a month from a location, and the location that you're at, you still don't know if you're going to have a permanent roof under your head, and you're with a family and children, you are considered homeless.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, people that not have a permanent roof, like not for a definite time, that falls like on the different types of homelessness that there can be. Mm-hmm. And I was just reading that in the National Homelessness website, that it says that there's three different types of homelessness, which is chronic, transitional, and episodic.
Mm-hmm.
The people with chronic homelessness, they are in a shelter. These are the people that we don't really count for, because we don't see them in the streets. They're actually in a shelter, in a place where, like, you know, they've been being taken care of in the meantime while they find a permanent home. But this also can turn into their permanent home. Like, some people have turned that shelter into their permanent home. I know somebody, a friend of mine, that he was in a shelter when he was very young, like when he was a baby, and he's still in that shelter. Like, he's now like 20 years old.
Wow.
And they still haven't moved from there, you know? Transitional homelessness is when they are just going from a short period of time to a more stable house. And then the episodic homelessness, which is related to the mental health and like addiction, stuff like that.
Right.
Which is interesting because, like, you know, some people associate homelessness mostly with addiction and, you know, losing their job, but it's also like mental health. Like, there are people which I have seen, like, lately, that they're in the streets and they are veterans. Like, they have been in war before, and they are just in the streets because they have PTSD or they have some kind of mental illness.
The numbers of veterans that are homeless is outrageous.
Yes.
And the easy that it is, that's something that I really wanted to talk about, is how easy it is for any one of us to become homeless. People think, oh, you know, there's a lot of stigma around homeless people, and they're like out there, oh, why don't they get a job? Or why are they using the money that they get for drugs? Or why don't they go to a shelter? Why are they sleeping in a park? Those are like questions that it's so easy for us to say them from the outside, because we have a house, we have food, we at least I have my rent secured, right? But how easy it is for you to become homeless is just a matter of a bad day, of a bad circumstance. Like, what if all of a sudden you have a medical bill that is, you know, way too high and you can't pay your rent? Or what if you're, you know, we most of us are living month to month, right? We might have 2 or 3 months saved up for a specific emergency, but not a lot of people can say that, right? Or what if you all of a sudden have an accident and you have a, some sort of injury that you can't go to your job, your regular job? And then once you become homeless, even for a night, it is so hard, so freaking hard to come out of that situation. Right? Because you say, okay, why don't they get a job? Let's talk about that a little bit. Where are they going to shower to go to that job? You know, that job, whatchamacallit, interview. Or what phone number are they going to put? Or what address are they going to put in the resume? Where are they going to print the resume? How are they going to be able to maintain even 2 weeks of training in a job if they're in a homeless situation where shelters close at a specific time? You can't leave your, they take away your possessions. And when you're homeless, like, all of us are defined by our possessions, whether we want to or not. There's a part of us that emotionally gets attached to our possessions. And imagine you being in the streets for months and months or years in that bag of trash. Those are your possessions. And to give them away where anybody can steal them in a shelter, other people can take them, it's just very, very hard for you to come out of that.
Yeah, we definitely give take for granted a lot of things that we see as like the regular things to have, regular, but they are actually privileges that we possess for not being in those situations. And it's really it's very interesting that you mentioned that, Josh, because even though there is specific data gathered, like, for example, that other people that that became homeless, there is a lot of people who are struggling with homelessness that are not necessarily homeless, but are very close to being so, or there is a very major risk of that. And that makes it even a bigger population. We talked about, what, 500,000 people?
Yeah.
Where there is probably, well, just let's look at this year alone and all the damage that the pandemic has made to the daily workers. This is kind of like a natural continuation of the conversation that we had last week. About 44 million people have filed for unemployment because of the pandemic. Way more than that have lost the job that are not able to even file for unemployment because of their legal status. We're talking about a lot of more people being at risk of being homeless. The very few progress, there is a quote unquote a little bit of a decrease that has been made since I think 2007, where it's like there has been a decrease of 12% of homelessness. But there is a that that is going to be just blown away. There is a lot of experts saying that that's just going to be blown away in this single year alone.
Actually, I don't know where you're getting that data, because every data that I have says completely opposite, that the numbers are growing, that poverty is growing, and that's increasing the amount of homelessness people on the streets, and that's without the pandemic.
No. I mean, if you look at the past 3 years, since 2017, there has been, every year we have had a national level increase of homelessness. But the overall, you're gathering over a decade of data, there has still been a decrease, even though there has been an increase year by year. About 3%, which was the increase between 2018 and 2019. Even without a pandemic, we were still heading in the wrong way. We were still doing really bad in terms of providing resources for people who were at risk of homelessness, because we still had an average of a 3% increase year by year. So yeah, this pandemic is just blowing those numbers out of proportion. We're not gonna see a lot of the consequences that we're gonna face as a nation until we get those numbers back, you know?
And you know, something I was thinking about, Josh, was actually, so I don't, for all of you who don't know, there are two storms of brewing, Marco and Laura, and something, and I, you know, honestly, learning about this and even just reflecting on homelessness in my own life, we talked about the temporary homelessness, and I have experienced that as a person who's experienced Hurricane Katrina, which was a natural disaster that happened in 2005 in New Orleans, where I'm from, and that brought a lot of it took a lot of people out of the city into other cities where there were these, for some people, long stints of homelessness, and for other people, shorter stints of homelessness. And it was really crazy because I'm 10 years old, right? And I'm whenever you think about a homeless shelter, you be thinking about pursuit of happiness, this person about to steal my shit, this stuff, and I'm laughing, but it was a really interesting experience. It was very short lived. But I was oh snap, as a 25-year-old, I look back and I'm oh snap, I was homeless. Definition, I was homeless because we were in a homeless shelter, even though, my mom was on her shit and stuff, and we weren't there too long, but a lot of people were. And it makes me think about what's happening right now with the pandemic and unemployment and the economic crisis and all of these things, and I'm if a hurricane were to happen right now in New Orleans or Texas or Haiti or Puerto Rico, a lot more people may be out of homes, and what does that look like during a pandemic? So I just was thinking about that.
Worse, it's what you experience, but 100 times worse.
Yeah, no, there is definitely it's definitely not a lot of people who are homeless, it's not because they did something wrong. There can be a lot of external factors that can lead you to homelessness. So that's something to think about whenever there is a conversation around the stigma that is around homelessness, is that you don't know that person's life story. You don't know how they ended up in the streets, and then you don't have the right to tell their story for them or to judge them. When you don't even allow yourself to have a conversation with these people, you know what I mean? But okay, we talked about external factors. What other factors are very related, have a real strong correlation with homelessness that we have seen?
Number one is poverty. While every person's situation is different, the primary cause of homelessness appears to be the lack of affordable housing. And this is according to the National Law Center of Homelessness and Poverty. In fact, according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, the fair market rent for a one-bedroom apartment in the U.S. is $931 per month, while an individual making the federal minimum wage can afford $660 a month in rent before they become rent burden, which is when you spend more than 30% of your income in housing.
Let's get a little more specific about that. You know what? Let's play a little game, actually. Let's go a little more specific than just the federal situation, more like state by state. I was looking at data of the housing costs of the specific states that we live on. So New York, Oregon. So for example, let's start with New York. What do you guys think? Do you think that you can find an affordable living situation with minimum wage?
No, fuck no.
New York minimum wage is $11.80, and the rent affordable minimum wage, according to what Josh said, that if you respect that 30% limit of your income, mm-hmm. before being overwhelmed by it, you can, with the minimum wage in New York, you can afford a $614 rent. What is the studio average rent in New York? Let's listen to this shit. Listen to this shit. The average studio rent in New York is $1,378. You're talking about that somebody with minimum wage, exactly, double, and a little more than double, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like double what they can afford before breaking that 30%. You know what I mean? Let's go to California, which has the second highest housing cost. The minimum wage is a little bit higher. That is $13 now. The rent affordable minimum wage, considering the 13%, $676. What is the studio average rent in to afford a studio? What do you guys think it is? Shoot a number.
I don't even fucking know. I've always lived in poorer cities, so I don't know. I live in Philly. The minimum wage in New Orleans is $7.
Well, since you said
so, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know.
Well, the average studio apartment, the rent for it will be $1,300. So that's still, we're talking about double the amount of the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Let's go to Oregon. Let's go to Oregon where Josh lives. Josh, in your state, you got a minimum of
$12.
$12. The person earning $12 can afford a $624 apartment. And we're talking about Oregon. Oregon is sitting at the 13th highest housing cost. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a little lower in the ranking. So they can afford, a person with minimum wage can afford a $624 apartment, but a studio is still higher than that. It's $949. So we're talking mm-hmm. even lower housing cost states, you still get that. Let's talk about an even lower housing state cost. Juanita, you live in Pennsylvania. You're sitting at the 26th highest housing costs right now, which is not that high compared to New mm-hmm. York, compared to Cali, even compared to Oregon. 26 is a pretty number. So what's the minimum wage in Pennsylvania? $7. $7.25, actually. There is a lower housing cost there on average.
Right now. So, right now. I want right to now, because right gentrification, it has it like there, mm-hmm. like literally, like there's a neighborhood right next to me, and it's like a new place is gonna be like $1,200 at that same one bedroom, but at the same minimum wage. So it's I thought I would just put that
crazy,
in there.
But crazy. Even right now, before that increase, you're talking about that a one bedroom. Let's go with the one bedroom statistics that you just throw. Right now, the average is $811. So you cannot afford that with $300. You know what I mean? So we're talking about a lot of people that are living, a lot of people in the United States mm-hmm. live by minimum wage. And they alone cannot afford a house, a rent, an apartment.
And that's without external circumstances. That's like if you have a perfect health, if you have a job that gives you the minimum wage, if you don't have 7 kids, you know, like that's if you're like you living on minimum wage yourself.
Damn, shit is deeper than I thought.
And you can't talk about homelessness without talking about all these other social factors. So
yeah, what's the next one?
Is related to that, but also health is related to homelessness in a way that poverty is related to health. Poor adults have nearly 5 times more likely to self-report as experiencing fair or poor health. And if you have bad health, that relates to increasing medical bills. Mm-hmm. And if you can't pay that, you are 100 times more likely to fall into homelessness.
Yeah, absolutely. All of those factors have the potential of increasing or have already increased to major levels. Because what is the thing that the government since the pandemic started, or not since the pandemic started, but since the quarantine started in the U.S., what is the government recommending people to do?
Stay at home.
Yes. Stay safe. But what about people who do not have a home, when literally the government is saying that housing is healthcare?
Yes.
Okay, the government is telling you, stay inside. And the CDC is giving you a guideline of protecting yourself. But if you're living in the streets and maybe you have a temporary shelter, how are you going to take care of your health and how are you going to avoid COVID? It's almost impossible. And you're not going to have health care because, first of all, health care here is super expensive.
Yes.
You're pretty much screwed.
There is a lot of the physical health factor in it, and there is also the mental health factor of it, which is even more complicated in ways. And there is even less resources for people who suffer from mental health issues that are in homeless situations right now. Mm-hmm. You see, like a lot of that comes back to the topic of the theme of stigma. A lot of us, Josh. Judge like, the people that we see in the street, that they might be shouting, screaming, speaking with themselves. But why do you think that is? There might be some kind of mental disability going on in there. Bianca, what do you think is another factor that can cause homelessness?
Well, I feel like, you know, like I said before, people have associated homelessness
with addiction
mostly because, you know, people who are addicted to these heavy drugs, meth, cocaine, you name it, they end up in the streets because, you know, either they're experiencing like family problems that they don't want them in the house anymore, or abuse, you know what I mean? So it all connects,
right.
As Josh was saying, it all connects one or the other. And it's interesting because even if it connects, you could have a little bit of each. And it could be like really, really, really bad.
So something that completely blew my mind in the Dominican Republic, when we were working with the poor kids in the streets, our church had a lot of programs that worked with homelessness and poverty and all that, as Tomas said at the beginning. But one time I remember that I was going to give 10 pesos to this kid. And somebody from the church that was there, they said, él es un huele cemento. He's a cement smeller. So poor kids in the DR that are homeless and they're trying to figure out how to survive in a country that is, oh my gosh, so ruined. We can't even talk about it. What they do is they get a bottle, a plastic bottle. They put cement in it mixed with water. And they smell that, and that's their addiction. Remember something that Daniel Aira said, a friend of ours. He said, "Hey, listen, if I was a 8-year-old living in the streets with no home and no food, I'd be smelling cement to fall asleep." And to me, that statement was like mind blowing. So falling back to Bianca, what Bianca was saying. Addiction can cause homelessness, or when you're homeless, it can cause addiction.
Interesting. It's like a lot of like what came first, the chicken or the egg. And at that point, when you're not homeless, does it even matter?
Does it even matter? Yeah.
What matters is that person who is suffering from addiction needs some kind of help. It doesn't matter like what caused what, you know? There is so much to cope with when you are homeless. I cannot even imagine. I would love to say that I will try to avoid drugs, but when you're living that reality on the daily, hourly, by the minute,
right?
It's easy to want to just try to escape it somehow. And if you can escape it by finding housing, you recur to other methods, and that can be drug use.
And
you
even
know what I mean?
Resourcing to housing, the aid and the resources that are available to homeless people, the system is made, it's so complicated for them to navigate it, right? So for example, in order to get any sort of help of Medicaid or food stamps or any sort of assistance, they have to follow a certain schedule. They have to go and meet their social worker Tuesday at 2 p.m. If you're homeless you barely have track of time. You're figuring out what you're going to eat that same day, what shelter is giving you food, where are you going to go? You lose your appointment. By the third time that you lose your appointment, the social worker just says, case closed. I can't deal with this person anymore. Whenever they're ready to come back, we'll have them back. So there's no follow-up. I mean, the system is designed in such a way that it's so hard for you to navigate. It requires a lot of I don't know, willpower and divinity for you to get out of that situation.
Mm. And it doesn't help that, like, people don't treat you like human, like a human, like, you know, like, right. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I've seen it and I've experienced it and I've even, like, kind of done it myself.
I feel that it's a lot of mental work to go through, and sometimes it's about dealing with the lesser of two evils. Sometimes it's just like the state of homelessness can be a lot for some, for a lot of people, and the lesser of two evils is choosing to do drugs to just like escape from the mind. One of the other bigger factors that lead to homelessness, for example, it's domestic abuse. What is the lesser of two evils? To be beaten up by my husband, or to be freed of that and go homeless? You know what I mean? There is a lot of situations where, in the situation of the person, homelessness is actually the better option that they have. You know, mm-hmm. And that's something that we gotta try to remember whenever we are a part of conversations, or whenever we hear people trying to dehumanize homeless people.
A little empathy goes a long way. Just trying to put yourself in their shoes.
There is many other ways in which not only us in our regular conversations, but the system dehumanizes these people. There is a factor of race, which mm-hmm. is a big one. Race inequity causes a lot of homelessness. That's a big, one of the bigger factors of homelessness. You're talking about a system that is inherently racist. We live in a system that practices racism, and those types of inequities fall into all of the other little categories that we have mentioned, but worse because of the extra layer of racism that is into it. So you can imagine how much more harder
racism, homosexualism, all the isms.
Yeah, all of the isms. You can even imagine how much harder it is for, or how much likely it is for Black people or Latinx people to fall into poverty, because they there is just so much more to juggle and deal with and work through.
LGBT youth.
LGBT? Listen, what about LGBT? LGBT queer youth, people.
LGBT youth represent 30% of clients in homeless youth shelters and programs, with family rejection cited mostly often as the reason for homelessness. Yeah, and once you have a criminal record,
oh my God, thank
it
you
is
for
so
touching
hard for
on
you
this.
To get
thank
yes.
you for touching on this.
Oh my gosh, like, okay, you're a youth, a homeless youth, right? And for, let's say you're LGBT, you're defining yourself. You go into a store, you see this dress that you've always envisioned yourself trying on. You have no money, you make a stupid mistake, you steal the clothes, they're going to grab you. If you're homeless and you don't have, they're going to ask you, where are your parents? And if you're homeless, they're going to lock you up. You're going to have a criminal record for the rest of your life.
Crazy. Which lowers your chances of getting any kind of job and getting yourself out of homelessness.
If I could add, I think something, when I think of like people who have been like convicted of something like that, I also think when I think of homelessness, I think of people like coming out of like jail, like you're like coming out of
prison. Oh yeah,
are they coming into a place where they have resources?
That's a big one. So
there's a project, I'm gonna talk about New Orleans a lot because that's just where I know a lot about that city, that's where I'm from. In New Orleans, there's a organization called the First like 72, I think, and like it's built around this concept that like it's these first 3 days where people need to, like, when they're coming out, that they need to get these access to these resources and this and this and this. And recidivism is real, you know what I'm saying? Going back to jail like is real, like, you know, if you don't have anything, like if you are pushed to that. So I think of homelessness, I also think about are people coming out of jail. And then we talked about race, and we already know like what ethnicities and races are like predominantly in our, you know, in our prison industrial complex.
That's true. It's crazy how like a lot of these factors overlap with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are people at the bottom of the barrel with that suffer each and every one of these factors. From every one of these factors, which is crazy to think about. Mm. But now let's just wrap it up. As interesting as this conversation is, we're running out of time.
It has been so great to explore this topic. And I know, we know that there is just so much more to talk about and say. If you think that we left something out or if we should explore something even further, let us know in the social medias. We want you to be part of this conversation. You are our most important guest.
Juanita, do you want to wrap it up for us?
Sure, sure. I feel like I was a lot more active in a different way this conversation. So, but it was such a good conversation. It's really a public health issue, honestly, homelessness and a lot of other things that we've been talking about. It just hits me in a different way because that's like my passion, you know, like my passion is public health and water and stuff like that. But thank you, Josh, so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yes, thank you so much.
I also wanted to just say, what can we do? What are the things, let's put it in a practical way where anybody who's listening, it's easy to say, oh, it's a system thing, the system needs to change. But what are the things that you and I can do to help with this homelessness population, right? The first thing is getting a list of shelters around your local area. Having that list ready in a little piece of paper that you can hand it out to any homeless person that you find on the streets. And not only local shelters, but any sort of services your local community might have. So there's churches that, for example, they do free hair cutting, or there's local food shelters, or anything like that. Medication, therapy, any sort of local resource that your community might have. It's a good thing to have those on your phone that are easy, that it's a quick easy that you can call or hand it out to someone in need. In New York, you have 311. If you dial 311 or if you download the 311 app, there's an option that if you see a homeless person in need, you can call them and the city will send two outreach people out to them and try to find the help that they need also. And give them anything that you have on you. Some people don't like to give money because they're like, oh, they're gonna use it for drugs. They're not gonna, you know, use it for positive things. But like we talked before, you don't know the situation that person is having. You don't know what they're gonna use that money for. If you don't want to give them money, give them clothes, give them food, give them anything that you can, but extending out that little help goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Especially during these times, remember that we are suffering through a pandemic, and if you have had the privilege of not feeling the effect of it, know that a lot of people has and is right now.
Yeah.
And it's very real for a lot of people.
Yeah, something else I would actually like to add. I feel like one of the most valuable things you can give is your time. You know what I'm saying?
Time.
And like, that's not even cheesy. Like, that's not even corny. Like, real talk, whether that's time like volunteering or just even time like literally just talking to the person. Like, I'm just like, so many like homeless people get ignored like most of the day. Like, one time I couldn't give somebody something. And this happens a lot, actually. I couldn't give someone something, but I was like, I'm gonna just listen to this person. And literally that person was like, yo, thank you, because and he was just telling me his story, like how he ended up where he was, and I couldn't give him anything, but he was like yo, thank you for like just listening to me, like I don't know,
you probably made their day, and that gives them hope.
Yep.
Wow, that's beautiful.
No, it's not illegal to be homeless. Like, it's not actually illegal to, you know, it's not even illegal to panhandle, actually, random fact.
Okay. Give a hug to a homeless, but we're distancing, whatever.
Yes.
But before pandemic, I read about this article, this guy who, that's what he did. He went around, and whenever he saw a homeless person, he asked them, can I give you a hug? And he gave them a hug. And you know, probably he would have to shower for 3 hours every night after that. But the fact that he took that time to do that, and you could see in the faces of the homeless people that it changed them. It completely brightened them up.
Another resource that you can find, if you wanna know a little bit more about how you can help, go check out, and I'll put this link in the description below, but go check out endofhomelessness.org. They provide a lot of information about the different kinds of demographic that suffer through homelessness, and there is a way to donate to the organizations. Well, anybody has a shout out that they wanna give?
Yeah, I actually have a shout out. So like here in Philadelphia, there are like a couple of encampments, and we didn't talk about that this episode, this podcast about like encampments and stuff, but that's just little communities of homeless people. But there's this particular encampment happening, and they are like using, I guess, their status to like protest for fair housing. And like there's all of this political stuff happening around like the politicians, they want to like victim, and like it's being pushed back and back. So yo, shout out to those protesters who are living in the encampment in Center City.
I also want to give a shout out to an acquaintance of mine. Her name is Mizwa Awan. Unfortunately, she recently went homeless. A little bit of her backstory. She recently graduated from college for sociology, and she acquired a job as an educator by the end of summer, but her situation at home has not been great. She has had a lot of on and off disagreements and arguments with her parents, and a lot of guilt tripping and emotional manipulation related with religion and other factors. And COVID-19 made things even worse, and she literally was against a rock and a hard place, and had to opt for going homeless for the time being. She has a fundraiser. If you can donate even a little bit, the smallest amount, it will help her a lot. Even sharing her information, I will provide the link for it in the description down below, and you can check it out. You can read more about her story and get more informed.
Yes. And with this, I think that we can wrap this episode up. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Josh, for coming. That was very informative. I can't wait to have you back again. Yes. And if anybody, any of you listening has any questions, has any follow-up thoughts, definitely let us know in the social media. So that are also going to be in the description down below. And join us for next week's episode, of course. Thank you, everybody.
Love you guys.
Bye. Love you too.
Thank you.